Welcome to Book Bistro, where book enthusiasts come to chat about the books they love in a warm and supportive environment. Today is Wednesday, April 17th, 2024. This is Shannon, and I have Robin with me this afternoon, and we are talking about transgender and non-binary authors because, well, I mean, there are a lot of good reasons to talk about this topic, but mainly I wanted to because I feel like a lot of people don't really know like what books they can read by these authors. You know, maybe they don't know where to look. They haven't really been introduced to reading spaces that promote these types of authors. And I just think it's so important that trans and non-binary authors are given more attention, more notice, so that their work is elevated in the ways that many of us are hoping that it would be. So we are just going to chat about some authors that we love, and maybe even some authors that we haven't yet read, but hope to sometime soon.
You can find us on Facebook by searching for Book Bistro Podcast. There we have our usual Facebook page where we keep track of our Wednesday reads and also post information about the Friday episodes. We also have a Facebook listener group that you're welcome to join. And if you prefer a different type of listener group, you can contact us and ask about our WhatsApp group. Both groups are pretty small, not super high traffic, and we would love to have you. If you want to get in touch with us off of social media, you can do so by sending an email to thebookbistropodcast@gmail.com. If you're looking for our main hosting page, where you can find information on the podcatchers that make Book Bistro available to you, you can find that information in our show notes.
So, do you want to start us off, Robin?
Oh, sure. I think it's, you know, there's so much good writing out there, which I think is, yes, you know, obviously the primary reason to read any author is
absolutely
that their writing is there, their writing is good, and we want to hear what they have to say. And then I think there's so much confusion about gender, and people have a lot of misunderstandings about gender, and, you know, the people to go to for answers are the people who are actually grappling with gender themselves. And so that's probably why I started really reading a lot of work by trans and non-binary authors. And then I just said, wow, like, there is good writing here. And there is good writing that doesn't get attention, maybe because people are publishing independently or because publishing houses aren't promoting as assiduously as we think they should be.
Absolutely.
And I think also, even if there is gender content in their stories, just because something's written by a transgender or non-binary author doesn't mean that it is all about gender.
Well, I think that is a really important point because I've heard people say things like, well, you know, I don't really feel like I could connect with those authors because that's not my lived experience. Or, you know, I don't know if I would really understand like what they're saying, because, you know, this isn't something that I personally have dealt with or anyone that I know has dealt with. And so I think to actually point out that, you know, these are people who are writing all kinds of different stories. Yes, some of them are going to be about gender, but there are some like straight people and some cisgendered people who are also writing, in one way or another about gender. So just because you're reading a book by a transgender author or a non-binary author, you're not necessarily reading, a trans book or a non-binary book if that's something that you don't feel like maybe you can connect to. And who knows, once you read one or two or 10 or 100, you might realize that, these are books and people, and that, like all of us, there are things that we can relate to and maybe some things that we can't.
I'm thinking of one of my favorite authors, Akwaeke Emezi, and that their most recent book or their second most recent book was a romance between a cisgender man and a cisgender woman. There was some interesting stuff around queerness and bisexuality in this book, but it did not really tackle gender at all. It was a romance. In fact, I would say the most important thing about this romance was that both love interests had lost a previous partner to sudden death. That was way more important than anyone's gender or sexuality in this story. I'm thinking also about Cason Callender's book, Infinity Alchemist. And I will say it's much easier. No, easier really isn't quite the word. There is much more space in fantasy and science fiction to play with traditional ideas of gender.
Yes.
But I still think it's significant when you look at a book and say, okay, there are people of varying genders here. Like in an Infinity Alchemist, there's a transgender character. There is a character whose gender changes every 24 hours or so. It's a
Oh.
total psychological and physical transformation. And some other gender variations, but those are more part of the universe that these characters inhabit. The book isn't about gender. The book is about the calamitous and chaotic things that happen to these people and the ways that magic is used and misused and the violence that happens to people. In Infinity Alchemist, I would say that the kind of more primary marginalization, primary aspect that marginalizes or privileges characters is their access to social and economic privilege. So there's just really a huge, yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say there's a similar theme in H.E. Edgman's The Witch King duology, and we do have a trans character and a cisgendered character who are in love, but that is just sort of a theme of the story. I think the biggest thing that separates these people is where their magic comes from, how they use their magic, how they're trained in magic. We see a little bit of kind of what would be considered like racism in our world, in the world that we're living in now. But that is this idea that witches are less valuable than the fae. And so we do have themes of gender, and we have some discussion of, our one of our main characters who, when they first got together, the main character was a female, like not by choice, but by birth. And then eventually was able to transition and become the male that he always knew that he was. And we have some discussion of that. And like, he's a little bit fearful of like how his partner is going to accept sort of the new him. But ultimately, like, that isn't the major conflict in the story. That is just something that happened, and it never really shows up as a point of contention. It's just, you know, it's more that he is a witch, and will people accept him as the ruler of a Fae nation if he's a witch? And so I think, yeah, you have those themes, but we also have, you know, other things going on. And when we're talking about fantasy, a lot of that does have to do with magic and the way a fictitious universe is working. And it just happens to have space for people with varying gender identities.
You know, I did, there is some capacity for this in historical fiction as well. I know a lot of people talk about being realistic in historical fiction about what it was like to be a sexual or gender minority in that time and place. And that is essential, though also realism includes some degree of acceptance, or at least the ability to blend in. You know, a lot of times we think that, oh, this historical time and place was automatically against gender and sexual minorities.
Yes.
The actual historical facts, as much as we can glean any facts from anything, are often more complex than that. But I am wandering from my point a little bit, because I recently read Most Ardently by Gabe Kolnovoa. I think you read that.
Oh, I did read it. You talked about it as a most anticipated book the month that it came out.
Oh, I
and
did.
I read it shortly after that. Yes. And it
yeah,
was
you got
incredible.
To read it before I did.
I did.
And the thing that I thought about this book, so it's a Pride and Prejudice retelling, where Elizabeth Bennet is actually a transgender young man named Oliver. And certainly we see the, would that era have been Regency?
I can't remember if it's Regency or Victorian.
Pretty sure it's not Victorian.
Then
anyway,
I would say it is probably Regency then.
Early 19th century, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, so then that would be the Regency.
The early 19th century, certainly we are not told that there is an understanding or awareness of transgender people. And we see everything from ignorance to outright bigotry. And we see that Oliver is really afraid and doesn't think that he can ever actually come out publicly, but also doesn't know how he's going to live in a life as Elizabeth Bennet. But we also see characters who absolutely 100% accept Oliver, who
yes,
support him as he is, who help him to express himself as the man he is as much as possible, who help him to keep secrets and slide under the radar. So as the reader of this book, I am reading from the lens of someone who is cisgender, although doing a lot of gender questioning. But I just kept thinking as I was reading the book that I would imagine it feeling like just the warmest hug to a gender nonconforming or transgender person. That it's reading this book isn't going to fix anything, but seeing these characters who are unfailingly, unstintingly supportive is just really refreshing and comforting, especially at this time and place in history that we're in right now.
Yes. Yes. I kind of wondered, you know, I haven't talked to anybody who identifies as trans. I actually found out like what they thought of this particular book. So, you know, it's hard to say for sure, but it does feel like something that would be just, I don't know, kind of like when you're reading a book and you run across a really well represented disabled character who leads this life that just feels so maybe different from the life that you're leading, and you're just like, oh, you know, this is perfect. This is what I wanted to see in a book. And I wonder if maybe that's kind of how Most Ardently would feel. Just sort of hits that certain spot that I think doesn't hit for a lot of us, like very often.
Not that it fixes anything, not that it changes anything.
Oh.
And it's not, you know, some people have written books, certainly as we talked about in fantasy genres, sometimes even kind of alt history, alt historical fiction, where gender and sexuality variety is accepted. It's not even that, though. It's just this lovely, warm book with an extra infusion of gender acceptance.
Another book that is similar to Most Ardently, not in plot, but in sort of that feeling, is The Spirit Bears Its Teeth by Andrew Joseph White. And it is a historical novel set like in that time when spiritualism was becoming a big thing and people were starting to get into seances. And of course, you know, some people were faking that they have abilities to speak with ghosts, and some people like really did. But this book had a phenomenal trans main character who did, of course, deal with, as you said in Most Ardently, you know, some ignorance, some bigotry, some discrimination, but also like within a certain subset of the characters in the story, there was that sort of warm, like unflinching acceptance.
We see this in, I mentioned A Quick Game Izzy before. They also wrote a book, one of my favorite books of all time, The Death of Vivek Oji. And yes, it is about someone who dies. But in the course of the book, we see Vivek Oji's friends rally around their gender identity and deeply, deeply support them. And I think what's really important about this book, and I've heard the author talk about this, is that the discussion of gender nonconformity is not happening through a Western lens. Ekweke Emezi is Nigerian. This book is set in Nigeria. Not at the present time, I don't think. I think it's set maybe end of 20th century, very early 21st century. But I would have to go back and look at that. So Vivek Oji does not use the term transgender. Sometimes Vivek is male and sometimes Vivek is female. And that's the closest that they come to this. And I think it's useful to remember that we're not always going to have the same language across
Absolutely.
The world, across cultures, across identities. This is just really such a beautiful book. There are parts in this book that make me cry for the absolute loving acceptance in this friend group. and this way of supporting their friend to be who she is on any given day, whatever pronouns he's using, however she needs to express herself, and rallying around to protect him, because it is dangerous in that time and place to be seen as a quote-unquote man dressing as a woman, or quote-unquote woman dressing as a man. And seeing that love alongside that fear is really moving.
And I think it is so important that all of these books kind of run the gamut from things that are like fantastical and fun to things that are like deeply moving and like so serious and compelling in a different way, but also like culturally diverse, because obviously like we are in the US, and I think sometimes it's tempting to think that like the US represents, you know, how the world works, and that is 100% not true. Like white European culture, you know, which is what a lot of the US is made up of, it does not make the world, you know, run, even if many of us think that it does. And reading things that are about gender, but from like through the lens of another culture, I think does kind of remind us that these are things that everyone deals with. You know, everyone like across humanity deals with gender. Aidan Thomas wrote a book called Cemetery Boys, which is about a Latinx trans boy. And we see how his family, you know, at first is really resistant to his coming out and being able to identify as male. And in the beginning, you know, there's a lot of pushback. And this is a fantasy, so we get to see some magic. And there is a ghost, actually a ghost that I didn't hate. And we see like evolution throughout the course of the book. And some of that, you know, feels very authentic. Some of it, you know, you can tell like the characters are not fully on board, but some of them are. And I think that growth and change is something that we all can experience, regardless of culture and regardless of how we identify when it comes to gender and sexuality.
So last year, I read a YA novel or novella, short novel, not really sure, called Johnny Appleseed. And it's by the Two-Spirit author, Joshua Whitehead. It takes place in and around Winnipeg, Manitoba, both on a First Nations reservation a few hours away and in the city. And our protagonist, John, or Johnny Appleseed, as he calls himself, moves to Winnipeg. He identifies as Indigiqueer. He is a sex worker. He uses his combination of gender traits to seduce clients. It's not an easy book to read. It's pretty raw, pretty gritty. I'm frankly surprised that it is labeled YA, because it's, to my mind, pretty sexually explicit. And my filters for that are pretty broad. A lot of things that other people think are explicit, I'm just like, no, okay, That's normal. And there is violence, there is poverty. But in speaking to what Shannon said about looking at gender expression across different cultural frameworks, I think it's a really valuable book. I'm kind of excited to read Whitehead's memoir essay collection called Making Love with the Land. I have not read it yet. I have it. Haven't read it.
It's a great title.
It is a great title. And I think I'm hoping that it's really going to blend that sense of connection with nature, connection with self, reconnection, authenticity, as well as the opposites of those, feeling disconnected or being disenfranchised, and watching the ways that the land is also misunderstood and disenfranchised. I wanted to mention Joshua Whitehead as well, because you might ask the question, so how do I find books by non-binary or gender non-conforming or transgender authors? And there are a lot of ways that we can talk about for a second, but or we can talk about them in a second, rather. But I was looking up of some author bios before we started talking, because I wanted to make sure not to misgender people or use the wrong
Absolutely.
pronouns. And I saw that Joshua Whitehead uses he/him pronouns in his bio, and he identifies as two-spirit. So you can't always go by pronouns, which is, I think, a useful thing to remember. I think it's useful to remember to take time, read carefully, and don't say if you don't know. You can use somebody's name if you don't know their pronouns.
I think with the internet being what it is now, it is pretty easy to do some of that research and try to find out if you're going to be not only talking about authors, but about anybody that is sort of in the public eye. And when you're talking and thinking about people just in your own life that pay attention to how they identify, whether you're reading an author bio or having a conversation with someone that you've met. People identify themselves, I think, in all kinds of ways. And part of what everybody has to learn to do, I think, is to listen better. And as Robin said, read more carefully and really pay attention to, what people are telling you about themselves.
And be willing to acknowledge when you make a mistake.
Yes.
I think what we're seeing now is a lot of, no, not a lot, but some authors discovering who they are or coming out as their true selves, or anywhere on that spectrum. So there are certainly authors that I have known over the years, or known of, rather. I don't know these people. I'd like to know a lot of them, whose pronouns have changed in the time that I've
Yes.
known about their work. Their pronouns have changed, their names have changed, and I just go with the flow.
I'm thinking of an indie romance author named Catherine Nolan, who I first learned about because she wrote a series with Lucy Score, who I really love. But Catherine Nolan is a non-binary author. And this was something that I think, she wasn't always out about. But recently, on her Facebook page, she talked about being non-binary and saying that, you know, she has gone from exclusively using she, her pronouns to using she, they pronouns in certain situations, and just how that feels much more authentic to her, and wanting her readers, her audience, to know, you know, that piece of who she's discovered that she is.
And I think that we can just take that, you know?
Sure.
It's not, wasn't for gender reasons, but I knew someone when I was a kid who changed her name when we were in, oh no, 6th grade, 7th grade. And oh my goodness, this was such a big deal. And of course, now I look back on this and like, so? She changed her name. She was very clear with everyone. She didn't, you know, spring it on everybody and, you know, well, didn't you know I changed my name? Well, no, we're not mind readers. She
Right.
told everybody. She told us what her new name was, told us what she wanted to be called, and why not? And it's not to say that in a situation like that, people aren't going to make mistakes.
Sure.
But to blame the other person for those mistakes is wrong, in my opinion.
Yes. Yes. I think we see this in some of like the YA books, especially that are talking about like the experience of coming out as trans, especially when people are, you know, changing their gender identity, and in a lot of cases, you know, changing their names, and how that is difficult not only like for their family members and friends, but also sort of the wider world. And so a lot of people will talk about how, you know, they go to a different school where they register under, you know, the new name, and hopefully are sort of starting fresh. And of course, that doesn't help with, you know, their family members and close friends and just other people that they know in the world. But they talk about, you know, wanting to have a space where everybody knows them as their new name, and not constantly having to hear, you know, the dead name again and again and again.
I haven't read all of it. I started it and really liked it, but my spouse really loved Zenobia July by Lisa Bunker. And
I was just looking at that.
Yeah, when we meet Zenobia, she has just transferred to a new school. We don't know why yet in the first few chapters that I've read, but it is very clear in the description of the book that she is a trans girl. So I'm not giving away any spoilers. And again, not giving away any spoilers because it's just an incident that happens in the book. My spouse was telling me about a time in the book where an adult is showing Zenobia how to put on makeup. And at some point, for some reason that I don't know because I haven't read it, Zenobia comes out to the adult. And the adult sort of pauses and says, oh, okay, thanks for telling me. And then goes on to say something like, you know, so you want to do this with eyeliner.
So it doesn't become like this whole big thing where
It's not a big
a big
thing.
deal and a, you know, a conflict.
It's just like, okay, I didn't know that. Now I do. Now let's do what we were doing before.
Right. It doesn't change what I'm teaching you.
Yeah. It really is an excellent book from what I understand. The first few chapters I read were really well written. A lot of, I think it's going to get pretty intense, but there's also a lot of humor. a lot of the sense of the ridiculousness. I read A Million Quiet Revolutions by Robin Gao, and it's written in verse, so it won't be for everyone. People who like their paragraphs may not want to read this book. It's written in verse and emails and text messages. But it's two young trans boys who are best of friends and in love with each other. And they go through a school year. They go through all kinds of problems. One boy's family accepts him. One boy's family does not accept him. And they look at it all through the lens of learning about the history of gender in the American Civil War. And we see them take on identities as Civil War soldiers to kind of cope with their current lives in a lot of ways. And it's really beautiful, really heartfelt, very rooted in real world reality, while still giving us a little bit of that escapism, finding a spot where you feel like you fit.
I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about a genre that largely for me, like I have found to be not incredibly diverse. And then in the past, maybe year and a half, I'm starting to see some changes in that, especially as it comes to gender identity. And that is the post-apocalyptic kind of zombie fiction that I sometimes find myself in the mood for. And there is an author named L.M. Juniper who wrote a full-length novel and a novella. And this is, you know, like all kind of post-apocalyptic fiction is, it's dark and gritty and definitely not for the faint of heart. But I loved seeing a trans man in the role of like the primary hero of the book. And I'm hoping that we get a follow-up to that book. The first book is called How We End. And it was just incredible, like, you know, because this is an author who definitely knows how to write a good post-apocalyptic story, but just having that bit of gender diversity, I think, goes a long way to broadening the reach of this particular subgenre. And there's also Gretchen Felker Martin, whose debut novel is a kind of a romp with these two trans women as they are like cutting a path through this decimated like wasteland that used to be their home. And it is very gory, very, very violent. Like parts of it, I had to stop and just go, you know, ooh, like I need to take a break. But it also was gorgeously written, and again, a much needed bit of diversity in a subgenre that has been like largely, you know, cishet white able-bodied authors, you know, telling those particular types of stories. So those are just two post-apocalyptic authors that I think are well, you know, well worth picking up if that is something that you're into.
Well, I will leave you to the post-apocalyptic books. But I will mention one series of police procedural crime books, which is probably the closest I get to post-apocalyptic. Although some of the cases and situations dealt with in these books, I wish they were post-apocalyptic, because that would mean that they weren't as realistic and real life as they are. But this is the Criminal Intentions series by Cole McCaid.
Oh, yes.
Cole is a trans man. And while the main characters of Criminal Intentions are both cis men, we see a wide variety of gender expressions and presentations in these books. And I just think that it's lovely that the core group of people investigating these crimes are all queer and or gender nonconforming people of color. How transgressive is that?
Yes.
So
that is not like the police force that, you know, many of us know.
No. And granted, we're talking about, you know, five or six people in these books, five or
Hey.
Six core characters. But it's still kind of fun, if you want to call that kind of thing fun. But I think Cole McCaid's an excellent writer. He is an indie author. He's a man of color and is writing from the perspective of someone who is not cisgender, even as he is writing his main characters as cisgender.
I read the first installment in this series and definitely plan to read more. But as we're talking about this particular series, I'm also thinking that I am not coming up with many other gender nonconforming authors who write kind of in like the mystery, thriller, suspense, crime space. I mean, I know there must be some, but just like thinking about it now, I'm not coming up with anything.
You know, I am not either. And I know there must be some. And it probably speaks to, you know, some people are publishing independently. Some people
Right.
are publishing with small publishers. I know about Cole McCaid because of the fondness for the male-male romance books, which many of those books are not written by queer people, which is all fine
It's
and good, and
true.
you know, that's a whole other nuanced discussion that we aren't having right now. But
I might have someday.
We could, yes. But that's just how I happened to stumble on his work. And then I read a couple of books and really, really, really fell in love with his writing.
Has he written anything with a trans main character?
Main character? I don't think so. Just had some of his side characters in Criminal Intentions, and they do get page time, and we do get point of view from them. But they're not the main characters. But going back to your post-apocalyptic and horror genres, I did want to mention Mae Petersen.
Oh.
And Mae is a trans woman who writes various historical alt universe kind of, I think they're horror, but maybe they're just fantasy with some horror elements. The first book, I believe, is called The Calyx Charm. And they're really well written. The genre is not to my cup of tea, but they do seamlessly weave in people of various genders and gender expressions in different ways in all three books.
I want to touch briefly, you mentioned male-male romance that, you know, like some of them are not written by queer people. But I wanted to talk about a few people who are writing romance, whether it's male-male or female-female or male-female or, you know, any of the above. I want to talk about a few trans and non-binary authors that I think are doing really, really stellar work and are getting some notice as they should, but definitely, you know, there's always room for more attention. So K.T. Hoffman has just released their first book, and that is The Prospect, and it is a queer romance with one of the main characters being trans. It's set in the world of minor league baseball. And sports romance isn't always my thing, but this one looks really, really good. Meryl Wilsner has written three books now, and she is a non-binary author who I first took note of with her debut, which was Something to Talk About. And although that book wasn't my personal favorite romance, I was really drawn in by her voice. And I also have to shout out TJ Alexander, who wrote both Chef's Kiss and Chef's Choice, as well as a holiday-themed romance. And these are like foodie romances with non-binary characters. And there's just like so much to love in these types of romances. So those are just a few romance authors that I wanted to bring to the attention of people who might be looking for some romance that is actually written by queer people.
And I will mention E. Davies, who I think publishes independently, and he is a transgender author. He writes all male-male romance. Some of his romances, however, have transgender males in them.
Oh.
And we see how they negotiate the kind of cisgender gay male world, the different ways that trans people express themselves, express their gender. It's not a monolith, it's not all one thing. And I think in the romance area, we get to see people negotiating their bodies. And that's been a really big thing lately in the world, is what kind of body does a transgender or non-binary person have? And frankly, it's none of our business. But also, we can see people in these romances negotiating their bodies, explaining their bodies to partners, or having partners discover and learn about their bodies, and recognizing that a person's body may or may not have much to do with the rest of their existence.
And I love that romance is becoming, I will not say, you know, that it has completely become this quite yet, but I think it is becoming a place where we are beginning to celebrate more diversity in gender, in sexual orientation, and just even in like the way couples or, you know, groups of people are made up, and that it doesn't necessarily have to be one person identifying always as male and the other person identifying, always as male or always as female, that gender is ever changing for some people. And I love seeing that represented in some of today's romances. All right. Well, I think we are running out of time for this particular episode, but thank you so much for joining me today and participating in what I think is a really important discussion for readers to be having and listening to.
Well, thank you. I have already have ideas for other discussions we could have.
Yay! And of course, thanks goes out to Christine for all of her fantastic editing. And I do often say that we wouldn't have a podcast if people didn't listen to it. So thank you all so much for joining us each week as we talk about great books and, of course, the people who write them. If you would like to let us know your thoughts, you can do that by leaving us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts or any other platform you use to access the show. And not only does it allow us to see your feedback, but it also helps other book lovers to find us, which is a great thing. So I will be back next Tuesday morning with more bookish fabulousness. And some number of us will be back on Friday with more discussion of great books. Take care, everybody.